Welcome to Game Time on the Fired Up Network. I'm Alex Campbell at Fired Up Alex on X, Fired Up Alex on Insta, and so on and so forth. All over the Fired Up Network site, write for the site, do a couple shows. Anyways, NFL free agency is almost over. College basketball conference championship week is here. The tournament is just around the corner, and I've got some NBA stuff on Bronny James. And how can I not talk about Aaron Rodgers for VP? So we've got a lot to go over here. Let's just go ahead and get started. So we had a very, very busy and somewhat surprising, and I would say somewhat frenetic week in NFL free agency. It's not over yet. I mean, really, NFL free agency doesn't end until the end of the draft, until the beginning of preseason, like in late July. Technically doesn't end until then. So until teams report and all that, like, it's not technically over. You see veterans get signed in all the time, but for all intents and purposes, kind of the hot stove era, to steal a term from baseball, the hot stove, you know, time of free agency is definitely this first week. And so, like I said, it's been a busy week for most of the teams. You know, one notable exception I noticed was the Dallas Cowboys, who, you know, have a history of slow playing free agency in a way. And Dez Bryant, former Cowboys receiver, took to Twitter to say this. He said, "Get ready to take the blame, Dak, because I really don't see no help coming your way unless a miracle happened." He said, "Everybody in the NFC East got better during free agency, but the Cowboys and the draft will not be enough." Now, I don't often take a lot of my, you know, sports takes and my sports advice from Dez Bryant, but he's right about this one. I mean, everybody in the NFC East made notable moves except the Cowboys. And really, like I said, that's just kind of become a way of life for the Cowboys in the offseason. Look, it's a very successful, very insular, small family, right? And so, and again, very, very, very wealthy, very successful, the Jones family, you know, and so what you end up having is a team of people there that feel like everything they have is the best. And like, let's be honest, in most cases it is. They drive the best cars. They probably have like some of the best, most expensive clothes. Look, their stadium, Jerry's World, is still like the best NFL stadium by a lot of people's standards. AT&T Stadium, I should refer to it as. But I mean, my point here is that belief of everything we have is the best, I think, extends to that roster, to those players. And I don't even need to believe it. I can tell that it extends to certainly the players that they draft and try to develop in-house. They actually hold on to more of their own draft picks, I'd say, than any other team in the league. They end up on that second, the third contract with those guys more than any other team in the league. It's not a new thing. But I mean, the reality is that I think that it's part of also what holds the Cowboys back, part of also why they could only get so far. I mean, just think about all of the running backs that were signed quickly on days one and two of free agency. I mean, these are the same, the same running backs that really went by and large to the same teams that were, saying all year long that, hey, look, we're not going to offer a second or third running back or a contract to a running back. And lo and behold, these same running backs that couldn't get those deals done in the regular season ended up signing, albeit for less money, but, you know, like straight down the line, and you got to think of the reason that all these NFL teams would run out and do that so fast. And look, the only reason they went out and did it on day one, day two of free agency, even though they got a bit of a discount, look, the reason they did it is because they're looking into the future and they can tell that this draft class, this running back draft class, is probably one of the worst in a long, long time. So while, you know, the adage for most of the year is, hey, we're not paying these guys because, you know, we can get a quality running back, in the second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, even seventh round of the draft. And look, I mean, eight of the last 10 Super Bowl winners didn't have a 1,000-yard rusher on the roster. And I think those were all valid points. But you look around now, and now that the price point on those running backs has been driven down and the draft class is, you know, not strong in that area, you're seeing a lot of teams. I mean, look, just look at the teams that did it. But back to the Cowboys, the Cowboys lost Tony Pollard and then just signed no one to replace him so far. Their running back room, they're as far as players who've actually been on the field and taken snaps, their running back room consists completely of the diminutive, that was a difficult word, diminutive Deuce Vaughn. And like, well, the Deuce maybe lose, that guy stands at like, you know, I think this, the measuring tape was generous when they said 5'7". Like he is a very, very small guy. I would say, you know, unfortunately at that size, you are prone to injury in the NFL. And he's really not a premier running back as is now. I mean, he's, you know, he's a younger player and the career could take off, but at this moment in time, he's not a premier running back either. And, you know, I mean, so many of these teams went out and got a running back that there are just almost too many of them to keep track of, you know, and most of these teams that went out and got these running backs are smart, well-run organizations. Look, both the Harbaugh brothers, for instance, went and signed running backs. Let's just go over the list a little bit. Derrick Henry went to the Ravens, and from one of those first Harbaugh signings, Saquon to the Eagles. The Packers, a well-run franchise, signs Josh Jacobs, really in the prime of his career. Minnesota lands Quadzilla, who left Green Bay. Aaron Jones, he stays in conference and goes to the Vikings. Zach Moss, the probably youngest up-and-coming running back of this mix, ends up going to the Bengals, who lost Joe Mixon because he went to the Texans. DeAndre Swift went to the Bears. He left the Eagles. And the Eagles, of course, like I said, it got Saquon, so they really kind of upgraded in a way. Well, I wouldn't say in a way. They definitely did. And then Gus Edwards went to the Chargers, the other Harbaugh addition. Of course, that becomes his first priority is, hey, let me get a premier running back. So he gets Gus Edwards, and the list goes on and on. The Cowboys' inactivity and hubris is even more galling when you consider some of Dak Prescott's advanced stats. I mean, these things are a bit eye-popping when you really look at them. Dak's advanced stats when it comes to how well the Cowboys do and how much he wins when they run the ball well, it correlates directly. Now, I would say that it does for most quarterbacks, right? I think a quarterback's best friend still is a strong running game, but it's more true for some players than it is for others, right? Like I said, 8 of the last 10 Super Bowl champions didn't have a 1,000-yard rusher on the roster. So I want you to just take a look at these numbers, though. So in games where the Cowboys have 30-plus rush attempts over Dak's career, he is exemplary, okay? He is 53-7 in those games. Let me repeat that. 30-plus rush attempts in a game in Dak's career, every time. So it's happened 60 times in Dak's career. They ran the ball 30 times. He is 53-7 in those games. That's how efficient he is when they run the ball effectively. Anytime they've, so of the times they've run the ball less than 30 times, he's not just under 500. He is well under, they, I should say, are well under 500 in those games, 20-34. So let me repeat that again. In games with less than 30 rushes for a running back, the Cowboys under Dak are 20-34. Okay? So let's take that a step further. In games where they've had a 100-yard rusher in the game, a 100-yard rushing running back, he is 64-17. Those are like, that's like a Mahomes type record right there. I think that's about what Mahomes, you know, career record is regular season. And then in games with less than 100 yards ran by a rusher, he only has 9 career wins. Dak has an over decade long career and has nine. That's not even one a season. 9 career wins when they haven't gone over 100 yards. And 64-17 when they have. That's how much the running game matters to Dak Prescott. And that's why I'm not just surprised. I'm even with the Cowboys, you know, given hubris, and even with the fact that they believe that their players are always the best, that they can always draft and develop everyone, even with the draft class the way it is, with the running backs being weak, or that position being weak in the draft class, even with all that said, like I still thought the Cowboys would go out and get a running back, because, you know, you can't just lose Pollard, have Deuce in the backfield. That is just, at the end of the day, not going to be enough. I mean, look at the Eagles. The Eagles have won 3 Super Bowls since Dallas last made it to a Super Bowl. They've won 3. They just got Swift last year and moved on from him already, and now they upgraded to Saquon. They have no problem acknowledging when they didn't get it right, whether that be in the draft class or free agency. And like, Swift was good for them. Swift was productive. But they didn't see that production continuing into next year. And they felt that they had a better opportunity with Saquon, and they got him at a lower number than they'd probably originally expected. So So they got Saquon, but the Eagles are basically ready to move on from anyone, and they've always been this way. Look, they moved on from Doug Peterson 2 years after a Super Bowl. They moved on from Andy Reid after he got to the Super Bowl a couple years later. Carson Wentz, they moved on when everybody thought that he'd still, you know, have a productive career, and it turns out they were right about that. They are very shrewd when it comes to moving on, even from successful people. And I would say they're also shrewd when it comes to knowing when to take a distressed asset. I mean, think about the Michael Vick time, you know, when the league had pretty much given up on Vick. Eagles go chase Vick down, he takes him to the playoffs. And that was, of course, with Andy Reid. I mean, they've got the hardware to show for it. I mean, just look at the star-studded offense they have right now. Like, by adding Saquon, they've got a young, mobile, electric quarterback. They've got a great receiving group, one of the best O-lines in the league, even after Kelsey's retiring. And also, I kind of wonder in the back of my head, too, maybe the upgraded running back is because of just that, is because Kelsey did retire. But, you know, nonetheless, like, the Eagles have, you know, for all intents and purposes, a Pro Bowl offense and a very capable young defense to go with it. And so, like, that organization is, you know, rewarded for making shrewd decisions. Baltimore, another really well run organization, recycled their running back and got their own star running back. Why? To make life easier for Lamar. Let me ask you this. Do you think it's more important for the Ravens to make life easier for Lamar or for the Cowboys to make life easier for Dak? Like, it's not even close. It's not even close. But hey, the Cowboys re-signed Jordan Lewis, and I believe they also re-signed their long snapper, so I'm sure they'll be fine. All these running backs, like I said, are getting signed at a discount. So, I mean, look, it's not like Dallas had to break the bank. I mean, they're pretty much, you know, going for half the value of a wide receiver. I mean, most of these contracts we're seeing are somewhere between like 10 and 15 million per season, for a player that just a couple of years ago would have demanded well more than that. I mean, really 10 million or so a season. That's a middle of the road receiver. That's like a wide receiver 2, wide receiver 3 type money. In the NFL in a lot of cases nowadays. So you're definitely getting that position at more of a premium. And like, maybe what we saw in the middle of the season wasn't so much a refusal to give running backs a second or third contract, but really a market correction, if I could use a financial term. Like, the owners, you know, and the front offices knew that the market needed to correct itself in order for these running backs to get down to the affordable point where they can still make an impact. But like, some of these decisions, though, like, are just no-brainers for these teams, especially when you've got them for. So let's look at some of the other free agent moves so far, and I'll kind of quickly roll through, you know, team by team and kind of division by division. I'll start with the NFC West. The Cardinals able to sign Justin Jones to a 3-year, $30 million contract. Sean Murphy Bunting, the veteran corner, signs 3 years as well. Mack Wilson, the linebacker. Tristan Cologne, DJ Dallas, the running back. Jonah Williams, the offensive tackle. Of course, they are able to get Desmond Ridder in the trade with Atlanta. So the little insurance there for Kyler Murray, who has shown some injury history. So then we have the Rams signing Jonah Jackson, Kevin Dodson, paying them a lot of money. McVay just doing, let me go back a little bit to my point about shrewd owners. I mean, look at the Rams able to basically rebuild an offensive line. You know what I mean? That quickly, you know what I mean? That's just remarkable. And you see some of these offensive coaches able to do that. So they go out and sign 2 interior offensive linemen to big contracts. You know, it wasn't too long ago when like interior offensive linemen weren't making anywhere near that kind of money, but things change. Like, it's how much the running backs are making. And obviously, you know, how much these interior offensive linemen are making. They also signed Kobe Parkinson, the tight end, Darius Williams, the corner, and DeMarcus Robinson at wide receiver. The Niners got Leonard Floyd. Of course, that was really early in free agency. They did sign the safety, George Odom, the other veteran edge rusher, Gross Matos, Jordan Elliott, the defensive tackle, and a few other signings, including Brandon Allen, the backup quarterback they re-signed. Seattle, with their new regime, went ahead and signed a veteran defensive lineman and Leonard Williams to help run that 3-4 defense. Noah Fant, they signed to a 2-year, $21 million extension. Corner Artie Burns and corner Rayshon Jenkins, Nick Harris, and of course they also acquired Sam Howell in the trade with the Commanders. And the NFC South, the Falcons made easily what I would say is the biggest free agent signing, with Kirk Cousins offering him a 4-year, $80 million contract. And I want to stop right there because, like I said, I think this is the biggest free agent signing in the offseason because I think it means the most for the organization that did it. You're making a statement about the future. You're getting behind Kirk and saying that he's our guy, and you've seen what's happened in Minnesota. I don't know that you can really be sure he can take you to the promised land, but I know they really like the young weapons that they have in Atlanta. I know they have a young offensive line. They like a few pieces on defense they like a lot. And so they're seeing this as a moment in time that, like, you know, basically we got Bijan Pitts and a whole bunch of playmakers. So we're gonna try to go for this and also in a weak division. And I mean, they're right on all those things. And I think that they're in a prime spot to probably win the division. But my question for the Falcons is beyond that division. Look, when you're paying a quarterback $180 million over 4 years, that's, you know, on the other side of 33 years old, look, I like Kirk. I like Kirk a lot. Matter of fact, when I was just talking about Dak Prescott, look, I think Dak Prescott and Kirk Cousins are very similar, almost the exact same quarterback. If you look at them, you know, by the numbers, just, you know, you got one fan base in Dallas that really thinks they have something that they don't. And then, like, you know, the fan base in Minnesota, like, they knew what they had. So what you have is like a, you know, 13, 14, 15th best quarterback in the league type of guy who is capable of having a stellar regular season, is capable of having, you know, of great games, but has shown that maybe he's not fully capable of putting the team on his back in the moments that matter the most in the playoffs, in crunch time. And I mean, we'll see. So like I said, I think this is the biggest free agent signing. They also added Darnell Mooney from Chicago. And Charlie Werner, the tight end, and a couple other signings, Ryan Nuzil on the offensive line, they re-signed. So also they traded for Rondale Moore with the Cardinals. So they've really done a lot to bolster that receiving core again, to go with Pitts and Bijan, and now adding Kirk, getting rid of Ridder, who, I mean, obviously they knew wasn't the guy. But I just, you know, I just wonder when you kind of just, I don't know, to me, it's just like they're reaching for what's there, not always what's best. And what's there this year was Kirk Cousins. And yes, it improves the team, but I don't know that it improves their chances at a title. And obviously that's what every team is chasing every single year. So, and when you're spending that kind of money, I kind of wonder why. I hope it works out. I really like Kirk. That quarterback, you know, documentary that was on Netflix, you know, Kirk has been like such a regular guy. And how can you not like him? You know what I mean? How can you not like a guy like that? Family man and such a good guy. But you know, and I'm rooting for him. You know, you might be able to tell from my shirt, my hat, and my background here that, and maybe even my accent, that I'm from Michigan. Not a Michigan State guy, but like I remember Kirk coming up at Michigan State, and you know, I've always been a bit of a fan of Kirk. So anyway, enough about the Panthers in the same division in the South. They were able to get the veteran guard Robert Hunt, sign him to a 5-year, $100 million contract. Damian Lewis signs a 4-year, $53 million contract. So now the Panthers looking to add some protection with those two guards for their young quarterback, Bryce Young. And they also acquired Deontay Johnson in a trade with the Steelers, who I'll touch on here in a moment, and made some other additions. So they've really tried to strengthen the team around Bryce Young this offseason. And I think what they've done is commendable. I think they still have a long ways to go, and I think Young still has a long ways to go. But I'm not with a lot of people who are ready to move on. I'm not ready to move on from Young. I think he's still got at least two more seasons. I really hope. Here's the thing. Okay, so here's the thing with the Panthers. What I really hope is that their owner, Tepper, keeps his hands off the situation for a while. Yeah, David Tepper. I mean, he owns a couple soccer teams. He's known as a very hot-headed, owner who, you know, if you get a losing season, he's ready to fire you right away. Point in case, what happened to Frank Reich, right? So, I mean, Frank Reich didn't do a great job coaching, but he didn't deserve to be fired when he was. It's not like that. Look, your number one receiver was basically a number three on most teams at best, and past his prime. Well, Thielen, yeah, I mean, past his prime, and that's what makes him a number three. You know what I mean? Like, so there's that. Anyways, out of the Saints, DeMario Davis signs a two-year contract. They strengthen themselves in the defense here. DeMario Davis, Willie Gay, and Tyron Honeybadger Matthew. Gay is a great signing for them. 1 year, $5 million. I really like the signing of Willie Gay. You know, other than that, they're able to retain a couple guys. I like where the Saints are at. Dennis Allen, I'm not sure he's a long-term answer at coach there, and I think they've got to worry more about the offensive side of the ball. But that said, I get it. They had holes to fill, and they got a lot better at linebacker here. So they could have done more, in my opinion, but that's fine. And really, like, if I can return to the Panthers for a minute, I really feel like they ultimately could have done more as well. They had a lot of money to spend, and if you really wanted to do right by that young quarterback, I think you could have done a little bit more. But, you know, for instance, like, the Panthers could have been in the running for one of those running backs. I know they like their situation there, but you're talking about guys like Saquon Barkley, and Tony Pollard and Josh Jacobs, and you know, guys that could really make a difference and take a lot of pressure off a young QB like that. So little surprised they didn't go down that road. And then Tampa Bay, of course, got this, the second prize quarterback. And really, I think who has still more upside than Kirk, Baker Mayfield, who was able to show that he's still very viable as a starter in this league last year when he was able to guide the Buccaneers to the playoffs. He's back in Tampa. And this is kind of what I predicted, is that he'd end up back in Tampa. I mean, you knew there'd be a bigger market for him. You know what I mean? But at the same time, I always felt like that ownership group that found success with him it was the one that was going to value him in the most. And in the end, I believe they were. They offered him a 3-year, $115 million extension. And obviously he took it. That's quite a payday. And that's getting right back into the realm of kind of the money he wanted to make coming out of Oklahoma as a rookie. They also extended Mike Evans, kept him on the roster, Antoine Winfield. And they kept those two guys. They went and got Chase McLaughlin, talented young kicker. Levante David stays on a 1-year, $10 million contract, and Chase Edmonds gets re-signed. Jordan Whitehead agrees. The safety agrees to a 2-year, $9 million contract. So I like, for the most part, what the Bucs did. And I think they'll compete directly with the Falcons for that division. I think, and that really will be the conversation, I think, all year long in the South will be, is it the Bucs or is it the Falcons? I think whoever gets through the season the healthiest wins, because I think they're very comparable. That is another season where it could come down to the wire, just like it did last year. They're not going to have this three-way tie at number one, because the Saints aren't going to be part of that conversation, I don't believe. But time will tell. Let's move on to the NFC East. I got the Cowboys again. The Cowboys signing a dismal three players: Jordan Lewis, Eric Kendricks, and Trent Sieg. By the way, all three players get a one-year deal. So not making any long-term investments there either. So the Eagles, the other team that I talked about with the Cowboys there, mind you, they went out and were pretty active, signing Bryce Huff to a 3-year, $51.5 million contract. They, of course, which we mentioned already, got Saquon Barkley. They signed the safety, C.J. Gardner-Johnson, from the Lions last year. They were able to re-sign Brandon Graham. They signed their own long snapper back again, and a punter, and a kicker, and another edge in Julio Okwara, and, of course, a speedy tight end, Albert Okabowankin. I just call him Albert O. And, of course, talented young guard Landon Dickerson gets a big deal with a 4-year, $84 million extension. So part of that star-studded Eagles offense that expects great things this year. And let's move on to the Giants, who we don't know what to expect from this year, but they're able to get Brian Burns from the Panthers. And I think, again, here's an area where the Panthers could have held on to Burns, in my opinion. He's not a premier edge rusher, but he's close. And he's certainly worth it. He's a guy that can go get you double digit sacks. And again, like, you're going to need a strong defense to help out with your young quarterback. They also get John Runyon, the guard, formerly a Packer. Drew Lock, remember him from Washington years and years ago. Devin Singletary, Jermaine Elmanor at tackle and Isaiah McKenzie at wide receiver. The Commanders also in the East got that Cowboys defensive end, Dorrance Armstrong. They get Austin Eckler, Marcus Mariota, Zach Ertz, Jeremy Chin, and a whole bunch more. The Colts are active too. They re-signed Michael Pittman, Grover Stewart, Zaire Franklin, Kenny Moore, and they get Joe Flacco in for AR insurance. And they also re-signed Tyquan Lewis. The Texans were active too. We already talked about Joe Mixon. They also signed Dalton Schultz, the linebacker, Aziz Al-Shahir, one of the best and most underrated coverage linebackers in the game. The defensive lineman, Denico Autry, Jeff Okuda, who I believe still has a little upside at corner with his speed and size. This is a big one. The edge, Danielle Hunter from the Vikings, who is a Pro Bowl quality edge, who they're going to park right next to Will Anderson and have a blast this year. And then, of course, the corner, Mike Ford, Lonnie Johnson, Desmond King, Eric Murray. So basically a whole secondary between Okuda, Ford, Johnson, and King and Murray. And then the kicker, Kaimi Fairbairn. The Jags were also pretty active, or have been so far. Not were, it's not over yet, as we talked about. They signed Josh Allen to a one-year, $24 million deal, which is big for them. Gabe Davis comes over from the Bills for three years, $40 million. Ezra Cleveland signs with the guard. Mitch Morse gets there. Darnell Savage signs at safety. And Devin Duvernay from Chicago signs at wide receiver to give Trevor Lawrence some more weapons, of course, you know, after losing the ones he had, but still you get DuVernay. Now you get Gabe Davis. And then Arik Armstead also signs them, although we don't have contract information on that one yet. Tennessee Titans signed Chidobe Awuzie to a 3-year, $40 million extension. They're the ones that end up getting Pollard from the Cowboys at running back. Lloyd Cushenberry, the offensive lineman that moves all over the O-line, plays guard and tackle. Signs with them, the speedy linebacker, Kenneth Murray, the long snapper, big long snapper signing period here, Morgan Cox, and the physical wide receiver, Nick Westbrook Ekine, as well as Mason Rudolph and Calvin Ridley, and the kicker, Nick Folk. So Titans had a pretty good free agency. Of course, the question for the Titans is Will Levis, and where does Will Levis go in his next year of development? Time will tell. Talk about quarterbacks in development. Pittsburgh was obviously ready to move on from Kenny Pickett and got Russell Wilson for a steal, as he is still basically being paid by Denver. They're getting him almost for free. And this is where I want to pontificate on the Steelers for a minute, because I believe they're right in line with the Cowboys in like a face-palming, what are you doing type of mode when it comes to this free agent class. So they get Russell Wilson for a year. They get Dante Jackson in that trade where they gave up Deontay Johnson. They get Kristen Kuntz, a long snapper. That is the fourth long snapper I've mentioned. They give Patrick Queen a bunch of money. 3 years, $41 million. Okay. None of those great organizations I mentioned are going to give a linebacker 3 years, $41 million to start with. I would also say the Steelers have the largest defensive payroll in the NFL by a mile. It was true before they signed Queen. It is certainly true now. They love to go cheap on offense. And like, this is what you get with Mike Tomlin. And I like Mike Tomlin, but he's a stodgy defensive coach in an era where most of the successful teams are moving towards offense. Most of the successful teams have young innovators at head coach. You look around the league, you got guys like McVay and Steichen and Shanahan. And for a minute there, Sirianni seemed like it. Ben Johnson in Detroit. These guys that are just, you know, creative offensive minds. Even Andy Reid is still one of the most creative offensive minds. So you see a lot more of these like young offensive coaches being hired in the NFL, and that the direction that a lot of the successful teams are going. And you kind of wonder at a team that's, you know what I mean, so hyper focused on defense. And at the end of the day, like, Tomlin is a good enough coach. He's a great coach, an all-time great, but you got to imagine this is an era where like Bill Belichick faded off into oblivion. Bill Belichick. And it's like, there is there any question Belichick is like a better defensive coach than Tomlin? He is. He is. And he faded off into oblivion. I think Tomlin's about a better players coach. And for that reason, he can actually motivate those guys. He doesn't lose the locker room like I believe Bill did at the end of New England. And he's able to get them to at least a 500 record. But that's pretty much what you're getting to in Pittsburgh. Russell Wilson is not there to save the day. He is there to game manage. And you'll be competitive. You'll be competitive, but in the regular season, you'll be competitive in the regular season, just not in the playoffs. Moving on, I was gonna hit myself with my mic there. The Bengals signed T. Higgins, their own wide receiver, of course, 1 year, 21. They just kind of kicked the can down the road there with a 1 year contract. Geno Stone, the safety, they're the ones that signed Zach Moss, of course, after losing Joe Mixon. They are able to sign Mike Gesicki and re-sign Drew Sample, get Cody Board and the hard-hitting Von Bell, as well as Akeem Davis Gaither got re-signed. And they signed the veteran D tackle Sheldon Rankins. The Ravens re-signed Matabuke at the D-tackle spot. Of course, the big signing, Derrick Henry, 2 years, 16 mil. Nice little discount there. Nelson Aguilar re-signed, as did Brent Urban and Malik Harrison. Cleveland signed Jameis Winston as a backup quarterback option for Watson. So it's a Watson-Winston team now. And at the edge, they signed Za'Darius Smith. They also signed veteran linebacker Jordan Hicks, guard Michael Dunn, Jerry Jeudy in a trade with the Broncos that they acquired, and Adam Trautman re-signed there. Kansas City, the Super Bowl championships, it finally gave Chris Jones a massive extension, 5 years, $160 million. Legarius Sneed signs him for a year and $20 million. Drew Tranquil, the linebacker, 3 years, $20 million. So you see some of those younger defensive players that they were going on the cheap with for a few years starting to hit that contract between like Sneed and Tranquil. Tight end Irv Smith stays for a year. Matt Areza agrees to a league minimum contract. And the defensive back Deion Bush was re-signed by KC. In Vegas, the Raiders signed Christian Wilkins, Gardner Minshew, Andre James, Amir Abdullah got re-signed, and tight end Harrison Bryant. The Chargers, Harbaugh Land, signed Gus Edwards, Will Disley, and Alohi Gilman. Not a lot of roster flexibility on that Chargers roster. They spent so much money on the defense. They're right there, you know, behind the Steelers and really have gotten such little production in that Staley regime from that team. So big things expected from Harbaugh. I'm not sure they'll be able to make it happen in year one, but I expect them to be nipping on the heels of Mahomes before long in that division. It's not even about the Michigan stuff that you see me with right now. It's not about that and a love for Harbaugh or anything. It's like with or without that, I just believe he is one of the best, college or otherwise coaches, football coaches in the world. Denver signed fullback Mike Burton, defensive tackle Malcolm Roach. I'm trying to get through these pretty quickly because I want to be short for time. I got one division left. It's the AFC East. The Patriots signed Mike Unwenu, Hunter Henry, Anfernee Jennings. This new Patriots regime was busy. Kyle Duggar, Jacoby Brissett, Kendrick Bourne, Antonio Gibson, Jalen Reagor, Okafor, the offensive tackle, Josh Uche, the edge, got re-signed. Christian Ellis got re-signed. Taki Taki got signed to a two-year, $7 million contract. They even signed a veteran tight end, Austin Hooper. I haven't heard Austin Hooper's name for a long time. And cornerback Alex Austin, and of course, Tyrone Wheatley Jr., on the offensive line. So yeah, Miami was busy as well, signing Anthony Walker, Jonnu Smith, the tight end, Jordan Brooks, the linebacker, Aaron Brewer at center, the offensive tackle, Robert Jones, safety, veteran safety, Jordan Poyer, the corner, Nick Needham, Shaquille Barrett at the edge rusher, Salvin Ahmed at running back, Sirian Neal at defensive back, Jake Bailey at punter, no long snapper for them. New York Giants sign, of course, like we talked about earlier, Brian Burns, 5 year, $150 million deal for him. They're paying him like a premier edge rusher. They signed the guard, offensive guard, John Runyon, Michigan man there, 3 years, $30 million for him. Drew Locke, Devin Singletary, Jermaine Eleanor, and Isaiah McKenzie. And the Jets, the last team I talk about because they'll allow a nice trade transition into the Aaron Rodgers stuff. Javon Kinlaw signs with the Jets, defensive tackle. Tyrod Taylor, quarterback, good insurance for Rodgers there. John Simpson, Greg Zuerlein, Tom Morstead, veteran punter. I think Tom's old enough to be my dad, and I'm not young. Offensive tackle, Morgan Moses, and that does it so far for free agency. I know it took a while to run through the whole list, but I think it's notable. And like I said, I believe the biggest one of the bunch there was Kirk Cousins, because it's the biggest make or break signing there. It's either going to work or it's not. So Aaron Rodgers, look. So recently news broke out that presidential candidate RFK Jr. is considering two guys, Aaron Rodgers and Jesse the Body Ventura, former governor of Minnesota, to be his Vince presidential picks on in the election. And I don't want to get political, but right now he's polling at like 20% in the general in most polls. And then nominated those guys. So I'm interested to see where that goes. Look, I don't care about the politics. I don't care about the politics here, and I'm not here to talk about it. But is this the same Aaron Rodgers that said the Jets needed less distractions from outside the team? The same one? Really? This is so quintessential Aaron Rodgers, who over the last few years, like these quarterbacks that are noisy, quarterbacks that go out and they make drama, like it just never goes well. It just never goes well. Just focus on football. Just focus on football. There's time for all that afterwards. Just focus on football. And look, to be fair, like Rodgers didn't name himself as a favorite for the VP pick. And I mean, a lot of people like Aaron. Like apparently RFK Jr. is one of them, right? But like either way, the Packers front office has to be laughing their butts off now. They have a young, focused, and talented team that just got to the playoffs and blew out a really good Cowboys team in Dallas at AT&T Stadium. They have Jordan Love, who was, what, second in touchdown passes this year and could probably be first with that young receiving core. Like I said, they have a stable of those of young receivers to grow with. They drafted so well. Look at Musgrave, the tight end, Watson, Dalbs. I mean, the list just goes on and on. Basically, like the Packers front office just made out like kings there. And they're laughing their way to the bank as Aaron Rodgers played what, four snaps into his Jets career, and this fall, I guess, could be campaigning for the vice presidency instead of taking snaps in New York. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think anybody really does, but this is who he is, you know? And I'll say this one more thing about Aaron Rodgers. Like, you are who you hang out with, right? You are who you hang out with. And he's wanted to make headlines for all sorts of weird stuff over the years. And it's very, very kind of, and he's a, you know, conspiracy theorist. And this is just what it's become. It's become a bit of a sideshow. You know, I often like to compare the Aaron Rodgers to New York thing, like the bizarro world version of Brady to Tampa. Brady went to Tampa and said, let me bring all my Hall of Fame friends. And Rodgers went to New York and said, let me bring my washed up friends that never made a Pro Bowl. Anyway, in the NBA, there's been a lot of talk about Bronny James since USC's season ended Tuesday night. Bronny, who averaged 4.8 points a game, of course, had that cardiac scare early this year in college basketball. And of course, like, yeah, he's a young physical guy with a lot of upside, or at least some upside. But the reason that the teams are clamoring for Bronny James has to do with one player, and that is LeBron James. In fact, an NBA executive recently told ESPN that he said this: I think a lot of teams will take the stance that they'll draft him, even if there's just a 1% LeBron James will join them. So I'll be surprised if he doesn't enter. And by enter, he meant the draft. But like, time will tell, and he certainly could stay at USC for one more year, and he probably should. I just think that the allure of playing in the NBA and playing with his dad is probably going to be overwhelming. And I mean, let me just say that it's remarkable that teams are still clamoring for a nearly 40-year-old LeBron James. Can we just like at least say that? I mean, I'm not gonna utter the words that like LeBron is definitively better than MJ. I'm not trying to have that debate. To me, that's the most overused, oldest debate in sports. Sports talk. But That said, it's just become something different now. I just don't know that we can even compare the two anymore, because it has just become something different now. I mean, look, LeBron James in his 21st season, okay, this was true like almost a month ago, in his 21st season has now scored more points than every NBA player who's ever made it to a 21st season in their 21st season combined. And a lot of those guys are Hall of Famers. So guys like Charles Worthy and Vince Carter, you know what I mean? Like those guys, they're not bad. You're not a bad player if you make it 21 years, okay? And so if you take up all the points those guys scored in their 21st year, they don't equal as many as LeBron scored this year. He is, in fact, leading the league in fourth quarter scoring at 39 years old. Jordan was a shell of himself in his mid to late 30s in Washington. The team won like 35 games. Nobody wanted to play with him. And it was clearly over. I'm just saying. All right. So it's championship weekend, college basketball. It's getting right. We're getting right into that season, man. March Madness is right around the corner. I'm so excited for March Madness. I'll be covering it here on the network on the article front. And I'll also be hosting a couple shows about it. So I'm like really, really excited for March Madness this year. Here are the teams that punched their ticket from the conference championships so far. And really, they're the smaller schools. So we got Stetson, Montana State, Longwood, Charleston, Oakland, Drake, Wagner, Morehead State, Colgate, Samford, McNeese State, South Dakota State, James Madison, and St. Mary's. They've all punched their ticket for the big dance. Speaking of St. Mary's, that West Coast Conference title game on Tuesday night was a great one. We saw St. Mary's against Gonzaga again. They have met a staggering 14 times in the last 21 years in the WCC conference title game. That win makes St. Mary's 2-1 against the Zags on the season, and they are both regular season conference champions and conference tournament champions for just the third time in school history. Of course, Gonzaga has made 8 straight Sweet 16s and looks to make it their 9th, but they'll come in as either an 8 or a 9 seed into the tournament this year, talking to all the bracketologists. St. Mary's has been a perennial first-round exit in the tournament, but continues to impress this season. They had a really good recruiting class come in, and this is easily the best St. Mary's team of the last decade. And I think they have the talent and the chance. But basically, they stubbed their toe earlier in the year. They started out 2-5, and everything's been fine ever since. And they have the chance to make it, I believe, at least to the Sweet 16 this year. I think this is the first time we see St. Mary's get past Gonzaga in the tournament as well. The ACC tournament, we also had some play in. North Carolina beat Florida State earlier, 92-67. Orlando Baycott had his best game of the season when it mattered most. But we had also some Big Ten tournament games play tonight and some other things. So we're looking forward to the end of the week when we get all these conference title games over and we get that tournament picture really clear. It's just such an exciting time in sports. I mean, still, even with college basketball kind of fading as it has over the last, I don't know, what did you say, 10 years or so, it's like March Madness is still really the pinnacle of sports in a lot of ways. It's one of the biggest events. It's like pretty much Super Bowl, March Madness, and I don't even know what comes third. They're just both on a different plane. So anyways, until next time, this is Alex Campbell with the Fired Up Network. Welcome to Game Time. You guys stay classy.